Welcome to the Plus Special Guest Podcast number 3. We're back. We were away for a bit, but we're back. We were away because of reasons.
Beast from the East.
Beast from the East, well and truly pummeled the west of Scotland. Mm-hmm. Why is Siri coming on my phone? Don't know.
I think when you said Beast from the East, it sort of...
It must have went
activated there.
Bet there's some sort of Russian spy device in my phone. Good luck finding anything in that. But yeah, we were away with the snow. I was at Glasgow Film Festival. Got to see a few films.
Nice. Anything in particular?
I went to see Mobile Homes.
Nice.
That one with David Tennant in it. I should know the name. I did see it. You, Me and Her, I think it's called.
I think I've heard about
it. It was really good. But the piece de la resistance... I'm not even going to finish that. I can't even pronounce it. The best... Well, it was fantastic. I got to go to the UK premiere of Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, I mind you saying that before, you were kind of hyped up
see that. Fantastic. And I didn't realise they had a producer there. I mm-hmm. can't remember his name. And I didn't even realise that it was a play on words until he said it. And I went, did he just say, I love dogs? And I went, oh, I love dogs.
Oh, like if you say it fast?
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't realise that until he said it. I was like, he's saying that film wrong. He's saying his
own
film wrong.
Most people probably wouldn't.
But it is absolutely stunning. The animation is beautiful. The storyline's good. The stellar cast, Jeff Goldblum, is amazing in it. He's amazing in everything. But like, it was so good. Like, I loved how the dog spoke English, but all the people spoke Japanese. I thought that was quite smart. It was just a really, really good film. Mm-hmm. And Wes Anderson's best. If that is not getting some sort of Oscar at next year's Oscars, I have no idea
what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the animation I wanted to see.
Oh,
that it looks crazy.
It is visibly stunning. Mm. Absolutely stunning. And it's a heartwarming film. It makes you want to come out and get your dog and just hug it and go, I love you so much.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
You can go see it when it's out. Mm-hmm. When is that? Is it soon?
I probably should have researched that before talking about it, shouldn't
I? I think it is soon, though, because obviously, that's been the premiere.
But so. Yeah, go see it in the cinema. It is outstanding. But as always, this store is brought to this store? We're not a store. Did I say store?
We offer a service, but no goods.
you don't buy anything from me. You can buy stuff if you want from me. This show is brought to you by The Retro Store, our friends at The Retro Store. The Retro Store is an awesome way to start your very own collection, whether it's games, comics, or records. And Plus Special Guest customers get a very special discount off their first box. You get vinyls, comics, retro games. Honestly, have a wee look at it. TheRetroStore.co.uk. Well, no, it's not The Retro Store. It's TheRetro.co.uk. If I'm doing an advert for them, I should get the website correct. But basically, take example their vinyl box. You get 3 handpicked albums delivered to your door every month. Ever seen the price of vinyl on HMV or Amazon? You know, you're paying 20, 30 quid a record. Why not get 3 amazing records delivered to your door for just £18 every month? When you sign up, you explain what music you love, what music you hate. Those fashionable tastemakers will pick 3 LPs chosen specifically to your own taste, and each box will include a note explaining exactly why the albums were chosen. I can't speak today, Paul. I think it's because I've been away for a while.
I know you're a wee bit...
blah, blah, blah.
A wee bit rusty.
But members also get exclusive access to the add-on store, where you can level up your boxes and save up to 50% on RRP goods. For example, another 3 records added to the delivery for just £10. Think about that. That's 16... No, wait, that's not right. That's 6 records for £28.
Can't beat that.
But you can't beat that. Over time, members will accrue retro rewards. Think of them as like frequent flyer miles, except you can spend your points in gifts or one-off goodies like their vinyl care kit. Shipping is completely free across the UK, and the first box is 20% off for the listeners. Like I said, stay with me. I'll get you good deals. 20% for the listeners of the podcast if you use the offer code PSGPOD. So visit theretro.co.uk, use the offer code PSGPOD. You'll be supporting a local Glasgow business, small Glasgow business, and you'll also be supporting us because we got bills to pay. So the retro store at theretro.co.uk, offer code PSGPOD.
I think your brain just tries to put the store there.
I don't know.
I do it as well, like in my head.
It's because it's such a good brand, I think. That's what it is.
Like, another thing I would say as well is like, check out their Instagram. It's really cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, like he puts up like a lot of cool stuff and he shows you like when he's, you know, getting the stuff ready to post out and stuff like that. It's kind of nice, you know what I mean? Rather than like,
Yeah, you can actually see
it's unknown if you know.
You
mean.
Can see it's actually like
like people, there's
people
and
there doing actual humans. It's not some computer that's just going pack random generating. They'll have these three records. There's actually people there, like putting effort into something that they love, hoping that you'll love it as well. So theretro.co.uk, offer code PSGPOD. And today's guest, we'll go to today's guest. It's actually someone from Paisley. We're a Paisley-based podcast. We've finally got somebody for Paisley. It's Scott Reed. Scott Reed, a.k.a. Methadone Mick from Still Game. And if you couldn't hear that, that was Paul doing a drum roll. Of course, we'll be talking about all things. Anyway, you've heard enough from me. I can't speak today. I'm sure I can speak properly in this interview. Take it away, Paul. So, I'm with Scott Reed. How's it going, man?
Yeah, very well. Very well.
Very well. Our first Paisley guest.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's nice. You'd surprised that a podcast in Paisley took so long to actually get a first Paisley guest, but I'm glad it's you.
Yeah,
I'm glad
it's you. Thank you very much.
And you being from Paisley, you started out at Pace.
Yeah.
I went there a long, long time ago as well, but I was quite a shy guy. But I was the kind of shy, cool thing where I was like, I'll play off and go, ah, that's not for me. I'll just stand with my arms folded and kind of thing.
Yeah, no, Pace was amazing. I started going there when I was about six or seven, right up until I was 16, and then worked there. You know, when I was at drama school, I used to go and do fill up vending machines and stuff like that. So then it gave me one of my big first professional jobs as well. You know, we did a tour called Choices for Life, where we went around, I don't know if you're at primary sevens, do you remember? You used to go to the ACCC and there was like bands, and then there was a show. You know, I did that when I was like 14 or 15. You know, playing to like 13,000 people. You know,
looks a bit crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, when you're 14 or 15, it was, you know, really kind of sets you up for life. And then did a couple of films there. You know, they were really massively influential for me starting out my career, but also gave me a foundation of and an understanding about, you know, what acting is and what it means to be a part of a group and a team. And, you know, they do amazing work up there, you know.
Yeah, like, while I was that kind of person, they always had some, like, one of the teachers that kind of knew how to work. He was like, oh, you should do this though, and you'll be... Oh, and I remember doing, it was like part of the Summerfest.
Yeah.
We used to do the Summerfest videos and that, and I was in one, I can't remember what it was called. It was something to do with the lottery. It was like a lottery karma or something like that.
Yeah.
Where basically someone was like, walking around Paisley picking up numbers and stuff, like, but they'd like not help the person that'd fallen, but the other person had, and then they see
a different
number.
They get you doing crazy stuff.
I had to steal a child's magazine from outside the museum, and I was a child at the time as well, so but I stole it, and some old woman was shouting at me. You had a lot of that, and then they had to put a fake sign up at the museum to say, oh, it's closed in 5 minutes or something like that, and people were up going, why is this closed?
Yeah.
It was just space for you.
Yeah, completely mad.
And also, you were part involved in the Paisley 2021. You produced a video for Paisley as well.
A video that, you know, did a tour of Paisley. I don't know, it's just something that I've always, wherever I go, wherever I am, trying to be an ambassador, you know, for this place that's, you know, kind of helped me through, you know. And actually Paisley's a lot going for it, and it's got a lot of things that don't go for it, but it's also got a lot of goodness.
The
thing that makes Paisley different from my experience of, you know, recently in September, I was doing a tour around the UK for 10 months. And the difference between when you go in between Paisley and Glasgow and other cities or towns around the UK is we have a heart. You know, the weather's miserable and everyone's dour, but Paisley's a real heart, and people really care about things.
Yeah.
You know, they're passionate, wrongly or rightly, you know, whether their opinions are correct or wrong, they're really, really passionate and strong about things. And you know, that was kind of when I step away from Paisley. I'm passionate about it and wanted it to, you know, grow and succeed and prosper and, you know, have the grace of a you know, a nice town, a creative town, a cultural town.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of understand where you're coming from there, because I've been about all over the place. I lived in Australia for a bit. I lived down south and always made sure people knew I was from Paisley. People, oh, you're from Glasgow? I'm like, no, I'm from Paisley, mate.
Yeah.
And it's such a trivial thing, but it's just... You are a bit passionate about this place, like, and you always want it to be stand out from the crowd and go, no, we are a bit different from Glasgow, we are this place.
Yeah, for sure, but also, you know, on a wider level, you know, when you do go around, you know, the world or wherever you do go, actually being from this pocket of the West Country, you know, of Scotland, it's really, really special. And actually having, you know, Glasgow up the road and Paisley here, you know, for me, it's we're really lucky because we get the best of both worlds. We get to be, you know, come and be in a small community in a town, and you know everyone. You can go to the pub and you're going to bump into somebody that you know, but then you've also got this major worldly city up the road that, you know, that we can just go in and dip our toes and steal from that culture. You know, it's really beneficial. You know,
you always end up bumping into people for Paisley as well. Yeah, it's no matter nightmare. Where you go,
Christmas Eve, the usual joint to the Bull Inn, and then see where the night takes us.
It was quite fun. So when I lived down south, I went to the Scotland-Brazil game that was at the Emirates.
Oh, right, yeah.
I bumped into more people for Paisley there than I would if I had walked through this high street.
Yeah.
It was a ridiculous amount of people I bumped into, and it's no matter where you go in the world as well. Like, and I've got a St. Mun tattoo on my leg, and I was in Australia wearing shorts, and someone was like, mate, I'm for Paisley, I know.
I'm on the buddies.
I know, it's crazy. I'm going to a wedding, and I've got an American friend that I met through uni and all that, and I'm going to a wedding in San Francisco, and he just told me that his neighbour's for Paisley, and he's a St. Mun fan, and I'm like, what?
I mean, there was, you know, when Scotland played England down in Wembley, I was just walking through, you know, Soho, drinking in a bar, and then a bunch of the Tartan Army came past, and I shouted, ran out, it was about 3 months or 4 months after Still Game came out, and I was like, Scotland and all that shouting, and then the guys ended up putting me on their shoulders, and there was a photo in the paper of these guys from just outside of Stirling. You know, I've kept in touch with them. They run this bar called the Clansman in this little small town in Stirlingshire, and it was mad. That was that thing about, you know, community and being Scottish and being proud of where you come from, and, you know, regardless of where you are, you know, being proud of who you are and where you come from.
You know? So you hear that wee accent, and you just pop up, and you have to look and go, where? Who else is Scottish here?
Yeah, I do that a lot. Anybody I hear in London that's from Scotland, I start a conversation. It drives my friends insane.
I know. It's like, what was it? Because of my English passes, we Scottish, like from the in between, I was like, Scotland friends and all that. Because also, like, where I stayed, there was a house a few doors down, and there was a Scotland flag in the door, and I'm like, surely I need to find out who this is. And he was coming back from that Scotland game. He was on the train and he was walking up with the kilt, and I'm like, how's it going, pal? He's like, where are you going? I was like, I'm going to the Chantries. He was like, I stay there too. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah. Mad.
And then I was at Glastonbury, and was it Paolo Nutini? And I spotted somebody with a Buckfast bottle, and I'm like, how the hell did you get a bottle of Buckfast here? And the closer I got, I realised it was a bottle of Schweppes that he'd stuck the Buckfast label on.
Right, okay.
He was like, I've got to represent, I've got to make sure people aware that I'm Scottish here. And it was
I mean, I took my friend over to my friends in Vietnam, and for his Christmas, I took him over a Buckfast t-shirt and a bottle of Buckfast, and I've never seen a boy more happy.
That's it. I was never really a Buckfast drinker until I left Scotland, but I don't drink it now. I had to ban myself from it. It's an evil drink.
That's right. That's why you ended up with a St. Mun tattoo.
Yeah, probably. And it really was just a shame that we never got the say a culture, but hopefully we continue on with the momentum. And
I think the you know, it was a really good sometimes it's important just to go through a process, you know. I think, and for us and for the people of Paisley, to go through the process of actually going, what is the potential, or what is the possibility, what could we achieve? And actually, it's, you know, Jean Cameron, you know, she's a wonderful lady, you know, very, with such a vision and an energy, and actually nobody even expected us to get as far as what we did. And actually, it was between us and Perth at one point, you know, right way back at the beginning.
Yeah.
And for us to be right down in the running, you know, in the final five, to be so close, to, you know, to be there or thereabouts. I mean, we didn't finish fifth, do you know what I mean? We're finishing second, battling for third, you know, at worst. And that's, you know, sometimes that's it's a bitter pill to swallow. But actually, the work that everybody's done has made a difference and will continue to make a difference. It's opened up people's eyes that maybe we could do something, maybe we can improve ourselves. And that's what it's always about, regardless of what level you're at or where you're starting from. I think, you know, I try and do it myself all the time, self-improvement. What's the next step forward? How can I do better? What, you know, your life is always an education. You never know, you know, everybody you meet teaches you something, and that's the really annoying thing, because when you meet people and you're like, oh no, I got it wrong. You know, that's what life's about, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so, you were obviously quite a big revelation to Still Game when you came into it. How did that come about? How did you get involved with?
So the Scottish theatre scene is quite, everybody knows each other, you know. And Greg Hemphill's wife, Julie Wilson Nimmo, you know, she I'd known her for a few years through friends, and I'd worked with a couple of her friends, Shawnee McKnight and stuff like that, Anita Vitesse. And she'd seen some of my work, but I was doing a play at the Citizens that Ricky Ross and Paul Higgins, you know, Ricky Ross, Deacon Blue.
Yeah.
I think called The Choir, and Greg and Julie came to see it. And then about 2 months, 3 months later, I got a message from Greg saying, "Hi, man, how you doing? You know, I've written this part, me and Ford think you'd be really good for it. You know, give us a shout when you're back, maybe we could, you know, you could come and meet us and read for it."
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a bam up, man. This is like not, because obviously it was before they'd announced that the Still Game was even coming back.
Yeah.
So this was like in the February, you know. So phone my dad, you'll never guess. Greg Hempel's just messaged me. He's like, "What? No." So anyway, in about the May time, I went to meet them. So surreal. Now just a normal occurrence. They're just friends now, but at that time it was, you know, it was really bizarre, really strange going up to there. You know, went up to Greg's house and Ford was there, and Ford's wearing this big pink shirt. Greg's got a huge beard, smoking these vapes, and you know, they just instantly switched into these two old men. And I'm like, this is so bizarre, because I'm hearing these guys I've known my whole life, Jack and Victor, but one of them's like wearing a pink shirt, and the other's got this huge beard, just like chilling, pure smoking on the vape. So it was a really good experience, and also, you know, it was terrifying, but it was something that really was it was exciting. It was such a great project to do. It's been such a great platform for me.
Well, it really is Scotland's sitcom as well, so to get a chance to be in it as well.
And the thing that I always try and drive home about it, the thing that really makes it different is, I mean, it's a sitcom about old age pensioners, you know, and actually it's a subject that really never gets a lot of attention. You know, old people kind of do get left to the wayside. There's not a huge amount of content about it, and actually it doesn't get celebrated enough, because it is a comedy, but there are really serious, you know, things through it, you know, like, you know, people getting neglected, or people being lonely, or people being, you know, having no money, or, you know, people just struggling with life and death, and, you know, that's a big, big part of our lives that we don't really like to talk about, because who wants to be old, you know? We're three young guys sitting here, and, you know, you don't want to be thinking about what it's going to be like when you're 75 or 80 and you've got no money and you can only put one block in the fire on, do you know what I mean? It's a really great show, and the guys are fantastic, you know. They're really, I look up to them a lot. I think they're very inspirational, and you can achieve anything you want to, you know.
And you also got to take part in the sort of live show as well.
Yeah, kind of a bit different. It wasn't like when I was at Pace, you know, I didn't get to actually stand in front of the 14,000, I think it's 15,000 at Hydro, which is crazy. But no, we filmed a thing again about 2 months before the Hydro show. You know, I think it had just been announced, and we're in SWG3 in this little room, you know, brick wall, recording this monologue. It was terrifying, because it was like, it was one take, you know, one continuous shot, and it was about 2 pages worth of text, and it was the first time I'd came back to Mick, you know, since we'd filmed it. So it was like, I don't know if I know how to do the voice again, or the laugh, or, you know, you know, who is this guy? Who is this mad man that I play? But no, it came back and it was really good, and he's been perceived, you know, the majority of people have really taken to him, you know.
I think everyone kind of knows someone similar. It's like you're hopeful, like your beggar that's like still a bit like a bit of a character, cheery.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean,
being in Paisley, we've got hundreds of them.
Well, you know, as I was saying, it's just trying to. I think when it came through, there was a lot of. I made some early stereotypes against him, and went, that's what he's going to be like. That's what I think. You know, that's what he is. And he was quite. Before, you know, when we were doing the rehearsals or the read-throughs, I was kind of a wee bit negative with him, and that was probably to do with me not thinking about it enough and actually going, look, let's subvert this, you know, let's make him happier than life.
Yeah.
You know, actually, it's the complete opposite, always with a smile, always in a happy place, always trying to self-improve, and, you know, that's what it was about. I subverted it, and you know, luckily, his happiness and positivity does really try and shine through, because the community is dark and miserable and dour. You know what I mean? These old guys who just want to sit and drink beer and play cards or dominoes, and, you know, he's really trying to embed himself. Yeah.
And wearing the teeth, that have to when it changed the voice at all? Or
well, I mean, it was a real process, you know, doing the teeth, because I went, the guys at Glamorous Geggies at the bottom of Dumbarton Road, you know, Byers Road, Dumbarton Road, just a really, really great, great team they've got there. But I went through, you go in, I got moulds, and then we had one set of teeth that didn't really work, and then we had another set, and then we got the final set, and they clip in. And after about an hour and a half, they start to get a bit sore, but, you know, they're great, they're fine. I mean, they completely make him, and actually it's completely hides my identity most of the time, which is fantastic.
So do you not, well, that's what I was going to say when you were saying that you hadn't done like his voice and that in a while, and would you have remembered
soon, as soon as they go in.
But no, have you not got people coming up to you in the street, I mean, anything?
As soon as you put them in, it connects to a part of your, you know, I don't know, like your memory that just kind of kicks in and goes, oh no, that's, you know.
Have you not got people in coming up to you in the street asking you to do the voice or anything like that? No?
Do you know, it really varies. Mm-hmm. I think in the next couple of weeks, probably more than usual, because the show's back on. But actually, it takes, on a night out, it takes one person. And if we're in a bar and one person notices, then that's it.
That's it.
And then actually, as soon as that happens, it kind of starts wherever I go. It's like almost like I've got a sticker in my head. But then there's days, you know, nobody really notices me, and I've completely got my anonymity, which is fantastic, you know. Because I'm out and about a lot, you know, I go out with my family a lot when I'm here and friends, and, you know, I'd hate to be bogged down by it. But it's also like the biggest compliment you can get, you know, people recognising you for your work and loving the love that people have for Still Game. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous, you know. They just love. They love the show, and they love the characters.
And obviously, the show's back. It was back
Thursday night.
This show will be going out Monday, so this is Saturday now. But
is it Saturday? Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
And you got your wee moment at the end, and Bobby with the tea tooth and that. So is it good to properly back into the swings and see everybody?
Yeah,
again?
I mean, it was a bit. You know, when we were filming the series in August last summer, I was doing a show. So actually, sometimes. The way the thing, being an actor, sometimes it doesn't work in your favour when you're working. Mm-hmm. Because actually, every actor wants to be working all the time and be completely available all the time. Because you want to be able to pick and choose what you do when the projects come in, and not everybody's as organised as other people. So sometimes you can get booked in a job, and then 6 months later they're like, oh, I'm actually doing this, still doing this one job. And people are like, no, but we need you for this 6 weeks. So my kind of schedule, I was doing Curious Incident on tour, and we managed to fit the schedule in when I was playing in Glasgow and Aberdeen, and then I had a week off, and there was days I was finishing and I was travelling up on the Saturday night or the Sunday after the show, filming in the Monday, then flying back down on the Tuesday to do the show again. So I was really, so that's probably why Mick's maybe not as much involved in the, he's got two or three episodes where his story's really, really prevalent, and then there's a couple of episodes like, you know, obviously just a wee touch of him, and, you know, next week's episode, you know, he's got kind of one scene, but then, you know, episode 3 and 6, he kind of, it's his, you know, little, it's his story, it's his, you know, involvement in that is much more. But it's just, it's got nothing to do with, just, I just wasn't there. I just, you know, you can't be in two places at the same time.
And you weren't affected by the audio description thing that happened with the Virgin boxes?
No, I watched it on iPlayer.
I've just got Freeview, but like I watched it on my mate was
I only heard about it yesterday because Greg put a thing on, you know, don't somebody dies in Still Game next week, and it'll be the guy on the guy who works for the Virgin Media.
Because what was it? My mate, he was like sending us videos. Went, is this for real? Is this part of the joke? I think a lot of people thought this was part of Still Game's joke that they were doing. And like, I was like, no, that's not happening to mine at all. And then I started noticing other people on Twitter saying it.
It's such a random thing to happen as well. I've never really heard of it happening before.
It's such a Still Game thing to happen, isn't it?
Totally.
It is. And obviously you said what I was going to touch on, someone apparently dies in this series.
Are you
able to tell?
Well,
do you even know?
Do I know who dies? Mm-hmm. Well, of course I do,
I don't know if they kept it hush-hush.
Well, I've just told you that I'm in episode 3 and 6.
Well, that's true. So you can't say anything other.
Well, why would you want to ruin it for yourself?
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
It's that is true.
You want to watch it and enjoy it. And spoilers are great if you can be an exclusive person having a spoiler. But, you know, as a fan, you want to watch it.
That's true. That's true.
I actually didn't read episode 1 because it was the only one when I got the scripts through, me and my agent were sitting, working out, just printing off pages, you know, because I was on tour and I didn't have a lot of time to, you don't carry a printer with you, you know? So it's like really stupid stuff. You're like in the office, right, what scenes am I in episode 6? Print name, episode 5, you know, print name. And I was only that tiny little scene for episode 1. So I was like, well, do you know what? It's the only time I get to not read an episode and get to watch it on the telly. So in,
helps your enjoyment of it.
But no, it does, completely. So on Thursday night, it was like, you know, the titles went, you know, at the end of the show, Bobby gets the tooth knocked out. I turned it off, you know, because I got, I got to watch a full episode and enjoy it, and actually really revel in those guys' performances again, because when you're in the scenes, you can't forget that you're in that.
Yeah.
And actually you watch yourself and you go, oh, why am I doing that? Why are you making that face? Who are you looking at? Do you know what I mean? Stuff like that. And actually you get to watch the genius of the performance. I mean, I thought Paul Young, who plays Shug, was just brilliant. And he's, you know, it's the only show he does now, you know, he's retired, but he's such an experienced actor, and he just plays that drunk guy, you know, just absolutely superb. Mark Cox, who plays Tam, I thought the two of them on Thursday night just were superb. The boys, I mean, Paul, Winston, you know, Jack Victor, they're always brilliant, but it was, I thought, you know, Mark and Paul Young, it was a real episode for them to, like, kind of steal the show and shine. They were just, it was like a comedy double act with those two that being,
because see as well with them actors playing drunk, it's a hard, that must be a hard thing to do, when you see it done badly, it is bad, but that they've all of them done it perfectly
well. They've all got experience,
well,
you know?
I'd imagine so.
They can all drink, yeah. I can assure you that, you know.
So was it fake drink they were drinking on the show, or was it real?
Yeah, of course. It's a BBC production, you know, in-house at the Dumbarton Studios, so of course, no drinking on set.
And you were saying there about The Curious Incident.
Yeah.
That is a book I love. It was one of the first books I think I ever read front to back. It kind of got me into a bit more reading.
Yep.
How did that come about that you became Christopher Boone, basically?
Yeah, so... The show was on for about 5 years in the West End, which the National Theatre produced, the National down in London. And, you know, just the process is when an actor's got an agent, and the agent, you know, gets sent through whatever show's getting produced or TV programme, and they send a breakdown out. So it was just, you know, I went through the rounds. It wasn't anything, I wasn't picked out or anything. I started right at the very beginning. First round is probably 100 other people. Then you say, you know, go through the five rounds for it, you know. And it was really intensive, and actually very, very lucky, because I auditioned for the West End in the March of 2016. End of March, April, didn't get the job. They phoned me in about a month later and said, do you want to do the UK tour? Starts in December. And I was like, it's a long way away, you know. I can't book a 10-month tour 6 months in advance. But if I'd have got the West End job, I'd have missed out on Line of Duty, I'd have missed out on Still Game. And then... Do you know what I mean? It's really mad how the world, you know, how things land in your favour, how you can be prosperous and graceful when it's got nothing to do with you, do you know? How you can be blessed. And actually, didn't get the job. A month later, I got this, did a short film with Catherine Howden, and then did an advert for Hewlett-Packard and Star Trek over in Iceland, which was just, I mean, the advert's not great, but it was just to go to Iceland. Yeah, then off the back of that, Still Game, Line of Duty, it was like, I couldn't have picked a... If I had to choose, you know, what would be your year? I couldn't have picked a better one. And actually, if I had got the job in the West End, Curious in the West End, I wouldn't have got any of the other stuff.
Well, as you say, close the door, open the window, innit?
Well, it's, you know. it was a really fascinating, fascinating job. Hard. It really took everything out of me, because, I don't know if you saw the show. It's obviously, Christopher suffers with... He has neither autism or Asperger's, it's never really defined, but he has, you know, difficulty with normal human interaction, physical touch and emotional connection with people and empathy, and doesn't really understand what's happening. And what the National found a way to subvert it, you know, was to do physical elements of the show when he's in his imagination. So he talks about going through space, and, you know, he'd love to go up to space and be a, you know, an astronaut, and actually he imagines all this stuff in a cupboard when he's, like, you know, next to the heater. And actually what we used to do is we used to do these massive physical pieces of him traveling through space and
Because I think I saw a photo of you being hoisted up.
And then we did the sequence in London. He arrives at Paddington Station and he obviously has a massive freak out. So for the audience, that would just be like a boy lying and running about or lying in the middle of the floor screaming. And what they did was this huge thing. It was about a four or five minute sequence of like me running and using the cast and running up walls and doing front flips and back flips and being like, you know, we did this amazing thing where like I was on a side plank and then walked around this, you know, the side wall, back wall, side wall. It was exhausting.
10 months of that, it would be.
Yeah, yeah. But it just, I mean, when you read the book, I mean, obviously it grabs you in a way because it's very rare that you hear a younger guy's voice, you know, his voice and his thoughts. And when you hear or read something like what Christopher comes out with and how he sees the world, it is fascinating. And it was such a, I feel very, very blessed and lucky that I got to do that story and tell and share his, the way he sees the world. I mean, it was exhausting and tiring, but it's, I don't think I'll ever work as hard as that again on stage. What it took for me, you know, every night, you know, it was an hour. I'd have 15 minutes, first half an hour, 15 minute break, an hour and 10 minutes. And, you know, emotionally and psychologically, I was just shattered. Took about 3 months to come down after the show.
I'd imagine.
You know, performing to over 1,000 people a night for 10 months, it was pretty, you know, and then doing Still Game in the mornings or doing a lot, you know, going off at the weekends and filming other stuff or doing voiceovers and, you know, just trying to just do as much as I can all the time, you know. But it was exhausting.
Do it while you can.
That's it. You never know what it might not, the opportunities might dry up. So. Exactly.
Also, I don't know how much you'd be able to talk about, is it Carnival Row? Is that the Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
It's got some cast. I've looked at it, and to be part of that must be pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really tell you anything other than, you know, I could talk about the people who are in it. You know, it's Amazon's kind of new flagship series. It's a fantasy noir set in a neo-Victorian city. This is all the stuff that's online anyway, you know, that you can go on and check. It's got two brilliant leads, Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne. It's a brilliant supporting cast of people like Jared Harris and Indira Varma and, you know, Simon McBurney, Andrew Gower, some really, really good actors. So it's been a great, I've got my last day filming on Tuesday and Wednesday over in Prague. So it's great. It's been absolutely wonderful, yeah.
Must be quite good to be part of. Like, I quite like how basically Netflix and Amazon are given a platform for more sort of out of their ideas, more kind of sci-fi, futuristic based. Like,
yeah, well, what they're doing is they're now, you know, they always basically, you've got the main house producers, you know, like Amazon or Netflix or now Apple or Amazon, Apple and iTunes. You know, they're starting to do stuff. And what they do is they have a co-producing company. So we have Legendary, and they work, you know, in tandem, and then they have a third producing company. So say a lot of these things film in Budapest or Bucharest or Prague, and they've got like a, so we've got this brilliant Still King, they're absolutely amazing, you know, Czech company who produce massive films. They're, you know, they've got their in-house team, and, you know, it's so there's like three massive producing teams involved in this. And then you've got the writers, you know, the writers and exec producers, some really, really, you know, big people who've worked on huge shows. It's like Star Trek and stuff like that. You're like, wow. So for me, it's just, you know, it's just every day is a school day, really trying to just steal and learn from all the good actors and forget all the, you know, all the bad actors, you know, try and steal as much goodness as you can, you know. Self-improvement, it's trying to be, try to just be better, you know.
You sound like you're always busy, which is always good for an actor, but have you had time to sit back and watch anything on Netflix or Amazon Prime or anything that you've
been doing? I mean, when you do go away and film, say you spend a lot, I mean, acting, being an actor, if you're not married, I think, or even if you are married, is extremely lonely, because you are on set sometimes on your own with a crew of people. You have very, very superficial interactions with a lot of people all the time. You know, how you doing? Oh, really nice to see. Oh, what have you been up to in the last couple of weeks? Oh, I was away doing this, you know. It's very, very surface. And actually, you end up, you know, some days you don't have, you've got 2 days filming, a day off, and 2 days filming, and then 2 days off. So you're on your own in a city where, you know, sometimes you're there for 5 days or you're there on and off for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So if you're there for 6 months, you get to find out a bit about the place. You know where you go, you're in like your restaurants, you know where you can,
yeah.
And that becomes a bit more homely. But if you're there for a couple of days, you're on your own, you don't know anywhere. So you're just like, well, go for a walk for an hour and I'll just go and sit in my hotel. And, you know, you miss out on a lot of things. You mm-hmm. know, you miss your family doing stuff and parties and your granny's birthday and stuff like that.
Yeah. But,
so it's, there's loads of pros and cons. You know, I get to do things and meet people that, you know, some people never get to do, and I feel really, really blessed and lucky. But there are dark times, you know, there is down times, and I think you always, any actor that you talk to, the down times, normality is hard for actors. Mm-hmm. I really struggle just to, you know, chill out Monday to Friday, go to the gym and get my hair cut and tidy the house and do a washing, and, you know, because it's like, it's just, normality's hard. It's not what I do all the time. It's, you know, you just go and sit in your granny's and have a bowl of soup. You know, you're sitting there for an hour and you're like, right, well, I've got something to do. Or, you know, my head's in five or different.
Yeah, so you're just constantly working in your head.
And actually, actors are exhausting people to probably hang around with. You know, if you don't, you know, when you see actors on a night out, oh, God, it's mad. Like, they just talk, intense, in your face. And it's great to be a part of at the time, but, you know, I mean, my mum and dad, they just find me exhausting at times. It's so super intense.
Well, if you've been away for a while and that,
you come home, how you doing? What's happening? You know, oh, we should go out for dinner. And everyone's like, well, nah, we've been working all week.
Yeah.
You know, so it's hard. That balance is tricky, you know.
So if you're being part of like a Amazon Prime series, do you get like Prime for life now, or do you get anything like that?
Nah, that's disappointing. Yeah, for sure. No, the thing I've learned, nobody gives you anything. You never get anything for free. You know, and even if you do get something for free, you don't really ever get it for free
because you've got to wear this item on something.
Do you know what I mean? It's just the way the world is. You know, we live in a capitalist society, unfortunately, where everybody likes to get something out of somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, me included. So you know, it's just the way it is. But no, I really love the way that television's, what's happening with television at the moment. I think there's some really great stuff being made, especially for young people. Like I think. You know, The End of the Fucking World was a brilliant series.
It was really good. Although, one annoying thing that happened was because she was called Alyssa, my Amazon Echo just kept going off and off every time because they just thought it said Alexa. But it was really weird. I was watching a program the other day where someone was actually called Alexa in it.
Yeah.
And it never went off once.
Yeah.
And you're just, oh, come on.
Everybody Sucks. I really like that.
That's like kind of 90s Stranger Things.
Yeah. It just really reminds me of like what it's like to be 14 and 15. You know, this, I think I'm getting to a point now where I quite like looking back and going, you know, my teenage years were really fun and really, you know, wacky. You know, I'm not 25 in the summer. I'm not old. I'm not, you know, pretending to be old. It's just when you do a lot of things and I hang about with a lot of old people, man, like a lot of guys in their 40s and 50s. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you forget, just, you know, mid 20s is great, man, you know. And, like, that's why I really liked The End of the Fucking World. I thought it was really on point and really, like, you know, you have those thoughts in your head sometimes where you go, what if it happens if I just ran away? But, you know, it's great. You know, I really love it. I think, you know, I started rewatching Skins. I just started the third season, you know. It's great, it's crap, but it's great because it's like the music, you know, watching bands like Crystal Castles, you know. And
yeah.
Thinking about when you used to go to the Unders. You know, you used to go with your friends and like listen to all that, you know, indie music. It was great. I loved that period of my life.
Because there are certain, like, what was it? I saw a meme the other day someone posted up and it was like 2000s music. And it's like every time you hear it, you just get back to a time that you, a time in your life you just didn't appreciate enough.
Yeah.
It's like, what was it? Like The Views, first album. That just takes me back.
That's off to the Busker Man, yeah.
It's weird. It takes me back to playing Gears of War on Xbox with everybody for school. Like just getting home for school quickly to get online and play.
I mean, for me, it was like, we went through the whole period. It was like the, you know, Baby Shambles and Pete Doherty and the Claxons and stuff like that, Maccabees. And I was out with my friend the other night and we were just talking about it. It's, you really don't appreciate it because it's in that horrible time. You go, I wish I was older. I wish I was like 18, man, so I could just go into a club and get steaming without having to ask somebody to go into a shop for me. You know, and can you buy me booze, mate? You know? And actually, we had a great time. We had a great time. Like the, you know, the teenage years, the parties, man, house parties were incredible, you know, and I used to be able to drink so much.
Oh, I know.
I mean, I can drink now, don't get me wrong, but like the stuff we used to, you know.
That's like when you used to look back and you'd be like, oh, that's two bottles of Mad Dog down, and you're like, I couldn't even think
yeah,
of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 mad. We once get one of the boys' dads worked in a building site. He's like, goes and he's like, right, boys, how much for 120 cans of Mary down cider? And we're like, what? Obviously, these had fallen off a lorry. Right. And like for about 2 months, all we drank was, I can't drink cider. I've not been able to drink cider since.
Mary Down was always my favourite. Even my brother, it's the champagne and ciders. It is outstanding.
I mean, even the smell of it now, you know, just, you know, 8-9 cans a night when you're like 16. Who the hell did you think we were, you know?
And you mentioned the music you were listening to and stuff, and you mentioned the Maccabees. Have you seen, and you obviously you mentioned earlier as well, off Mike, about how you collect vinyl. Yeah. Have you seen the Maccabees vinyl that's getting released for Record Store
Day? No.
Beautiful. But the annoying thing is it's only going to be limited to 1,000 or like it was 1,800 or something like that. So if Feel the Groove and Paisley are listening, make sure you have that in for me.
No, it's music's such a, it really transports me places. I think obviously being an actor, you know, it takes you into a different place in your head, whether it's emotional memory, what you're talking about, takes you back to being young, or it takes you into like a different place, or whenever music really resonates with you, it kind of, it's very much like acting to me. I think music, really good music and performing, you know, when you watch a good artist or you hear the suffering that they go through or the joy that they go through, it really transports you somewhere. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, really wish, I was in a band when we were 16, 17 called the Angies, and we played the main stage Barrowlands, you know the walkway?
Yeah.
The Angies is, you know, the walkway up to the Barrowlands when you go through, the Angies is on it. The Angies, mad. 29 to the first 2010 or 11 or something. Ridiculous. And it was probably one of the happiest periods of my life performing on stage. Different from acting, but, you know, seeing people sing your songs and, you know, connect with you on that level, you know, it was great. I mean, that's why I really like Jerry Cinnamon. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I saw him at the Barrowlands, and his songwriting ability is just great because it's just the common man's tongue. And actually, we've been missing that for a few years, I think. And, you know, The View used to do it, and that's why they were really good. And I just think he's really great. He's captured the essence of what it is to be, you know, from 18 to 35 in Glasgow at the moment. And I think it's, you know, my hat goes off to him. He's really, really great. I can't wait. I was meant to go and see him up in Inverness, but it got cancelled. So
because of the snow.
Going on the 6th of April. He's great. Jerry's really great.
Like, I had tickets to go see the Barrowlands, but I had to end up giving it away because I see that flu that was going around at Christmas.
Oh.
Hit me bad, and I couldn't talk, and I couldn't breathe properly.
One of the best gigs I've ever been to. It hadn't been like a gig like that since I saw... We used to go and see Pete Docherty and Baby Shambles, all the time. I went twice in one Valentine's Day weekend.
Did you see him when he was in Glasgow with Graham Coxon?
No.
Oh, that was a brilliant show. That was an absolutely brilliant show. Like, and you could tell, I think it was round about, he was getting clean, and you could tell there was a big difference between him the last time I seen him, that he was clean.
One of my favourite...
also saw his family, like his mum and dad were at the side of the stage.
One of my favourite ones was just... him on his own with a guitar. And that's what Jerry Cinnamon done, which was really impressive. But Pete managed to hold an audience in the palm of his hand for nearly 2 hours, whether he was off his face or not. That's difficult, you know. I trying to hold a theatre audience for 2 hours is extremely difficult, and they're sitting down and concentrating.
Yeah.
But trying to hold a rowdy bunch of Glaswegians who are off their face... it's even harder, you know. And
it's just that moment of silence when that's all you can hear is every like guitar plucked.
Superb.
Did you go to the Hydro one with the View supporting, the View and Reverend the Maples?
No, I didn't.
That was a good one as well. I think it was the last time I was at the Hydro.
No, I think the only time I really saw them was at the Barris.
Barris?
Yeah, Baby Shambles, Pete Docherty, yeah. I tried to go in to see, what was it called, Carl Barat's band?
Is it Dirty Pretty Things?
Dirty Pretty Things when I was about 14. It was the same day Rangers were in the UEFA Cup final, and because Glasgow Town Centre was dead.
Yeah.
And we were drinking at the river. And I was too drunk, didn't get in. Oh, it was really disappointing.
And have you ever thought about, like, with obviously, if you ever get a wee bit of time, and obviously you're now quite well known, would you ever think about going back to music again? Or,
well, I don't know, like, my friends keep asking me not to take advantage of, you know, any of that stuff. It's just to be in a room and play music with people. I mean, it's something that I love, and it's I just don't think I'm as good as I was when I was 16 or 17, and that's probably not true. It's probably I'm probably a bit of a better guitar player, and I know how to, I've been trained in how to like sing, so I'm probably, you know, at drama school, you know, you go through that stuff, so I'm actually probably better than I was then. But in my head, there's something about, you're just too, you know, you're a bit past it. Nobody wants to hear what you've got to say about the world, because it's different, you know.
I think the pop acid might be a bit different as well, methadone mixed band.
Do you know what I mean? But also, I'm trying to, you know, no disrespect to methadone Mick at all. He's been such a great platform for me, but I'm completely trying to, I liked it. Nobody really associates me with him. Mm-hmm. He's such a character on his own.
Yeah.
And actually, it's, you know, an actor's kind of nightmare, as long as well as being their dream, is to be like Alan Partridge, you know. Wherever he goes, Steve Carell, people know it's Partridge. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, so for me, it's like, it's early enough days, but by the time, you know, whenever Still Game finishes next year or the year after, whenever it does close down, or they might not even bring him back next season, you know, I'm only 24, you know, I want to be acting until 60 or 70, and I don't want to always be known as, oh, remember that, you know, sitting, you know, wherever you are, remember that time you played Methadone Mick? You're like, yep, yeah, I can't.
Well, I think that's what's quite good about all the, like, the prosthetic teeth and everything like that. It means you are kind of hidden behind that, so you can hide behind.
You know, so it's because it's, you know, he's an amazing character, you know. He's so different, you know. But actually, for me, that's why it's been the projects that I've been lucky enough to do, you know, they're so different. You know, Line of Duty was so different from Still Game and Curious, and what the character I play in Carnival Row is so, again, so, so different from, you know, from that. It's about trying to do is I want to try to do everything, you know, taste everything, see, you know, do I like comedy, do I want to do comedy, do I want to do drama, fantasy, you know, sci-fi, do you want to do films, do you want, you know what I mean, it's you want to try everything and experience it all, because then you don't want to look back and just be like, oh, I can't believe I just did that, that's all I did, you know. I'd rather do something and be rubbish at it, but at least I've tried it,
yeah,
you know.
So, what did you think when you first saw someone had you tattooed to them?
Well, actually, the guy who sent me, it's a guy called Danny Caffrey, who who's became one of my really good friends now. He lives up in Inverness. He runs a clothes shop called Caffrey's Designwear. There you go, Danny.
Plug.
Yeah. he's really lovely, and he sent me that, and I saw it. I was like, that's a bit mad, man. The guy's got methadone Mick in his calf. And then it was the same time about Halloween when it first came out. So I was in a night out and I saw two or three people dressed as Methadone Mick. And I'm like, this is mad. This is madness. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's going on? I'm like, the guy, oh, how are you doing? I like your costume. He's like, cheers, man. Have you seen him? Like, great. And I'm like, oh, no, he's not my favourite, you know. I do that all, you know, when I'm out all the time. If people, people say, you know, are you for Still Game? I'm like, no. Why? Like, oh, you look like Methadone. What? Why is Methadone Mick? He's rubbish. He's the worst character. You know, completely slagged yourself. Just, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to take it, isn't it?
That's it, you know.
And on to, back to Carnival Row.
Yeah.
You are playing Quill. Can you tell us anything about him at all? Or are you sworn to secrecy?
No, it's not sworn to secrecy. It's just, No, I'm not.
Fair enough. And it is out 2019. Is there any sort of rough idea?
I have no idea. No idea. If you don't know, probably I don't know. No, like, fair enough. Just they don't. These things are so close shop, you know. You turn up and then you get told what you're filming, and then you go home.
Fair enough.
That's it.
And I was actually going to pre-warn you, and I forgot about it until I read in my notes. But you did tell me you listened to the Sanjeev Kohli podcast, so you should know what's coming up. Basically, we ask every guest to put on a song for the Spotify playlist that we have. Yep. What would you like to put in?
Well, I think probably because we've talked about Jerry Cinnamon, I'll put on the Diamonds in the Mud.
Good tune. That is a good tune.
Yeah.
So where can people find you?
Twitter on @ScottReid93 and Instagram the exact same. That's it, really.
And Still Game every Thursday.
Every Thursday for the next 5 weeks.
Keep an eye out for Carnival Row. I'm actually looking forward to this. When I read the synopsis of it, I went, oh, it sounds quite good.
No, it is. It's a really exciting project, and actually it's something that I've never really thought I'd be a part of. So it's a really exciting project. there's a lot of new things and the, you know, coming to television, and the technology and the way it works is great. Mm-hmm. The sets are fantastic and the cast are all wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, with them, like the kind of sci-fi things, have you watched any of the ones on Netflix, like Bright or?
I saw Bright.
I quite like Bright. Yeah. They all seem to be getting a bit of stick, but I've liked every one of them. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think what it does is it doesn't. I mean, the thing with Bright was it didn't for me. It didn't feel like it was a real world in terms of the settlement of the creatures. It felt like it was quite new.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like their history was there.
Yeah.
It was set, I mean, ours is not set in a modern world. Ours is set in a neo-Victorian, you know, so it's like old London type thing. It's quite old-fashioned. But actually, when you've got new creatures or when you introduce new things to audiences, audiences have to believe that they've got history.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what let Bright down. I felt it was just quite, these characters are in this world now, here and then.
Yeah.
But where did they come from? How did they get there? There was kind of none of that really explained.
Oh, that's true. Maybe they might explore that in the future.
It's an hour and 50 minutes, the film. And true. I thought it was great. I thought the boy who played, what's his name, the boy opposite Will Smith?
Oh, Joel Edgerton.
Yeah, I thought he was just superb. Mm. I mean, a lot of probably CGI and work done, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, what he does with his eyes is real.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that moved. That was effective and really moved me. I think fantasy's hard also. Mm-hmm. We've been very lucky, our generation, I think, of watching CGI and fantasy come through. You know, even if you watch things like Lord of the Rings now, I mean, I'll never forget Helm's Deep. Mm-hmm. I still watch it just going, you know, that battle itself is superb, but CGI now is is terrible. You know, compared to what we get to watch, you know, get to watch now. I watched an old James Bond film, one with Timothy Dalton, and it was just like the special effects. He held his breath underwater for about 15 minutes at one point. And you're going, this is just like, this is nonsense. But, you know, the way technology is transforming cinema, and, you know, a mutual friend of ours, Mark, he's just got a film out.
A Macbeth
film that comes out on the 13th, which is in 3 days. Is that Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday.
And that's completely done in green screen, and the trailer for that looks...
It does, it looks really, really good.
Really super.
You wouldn't be able to tell, I don't think.
No, it's all green screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that just goes to, that's a completely new thing. It's, I think it's the first of its kind to be completely done all in green screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a really exciting time for cinema and TV, and hopefully people just keep going to the theatre and funding that, because that's probably the most important out of them all.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for coming in.
No worries,
it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks very much.
No problem, thanks.